Begin after six taps. One, two, three, four, five, six.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Glue Sniffers Anonymous. I'm your host, Ethel Merman, a.k.a. Lady P. No relation to Master P. Joining me today is down-his-luck fighter pilot with a drinking problem, Mr. Martin Kessler.
Hello.
This is Martin's second appearance on the show. You've been on for the Andrei Rublev episode, correct?
Yes, I remember I had the lasagna.
Also joining us is FlixWise regular, my dearest brother, Mr. Gary Lampert.
Hello.
Gary, while not an industry professional per se, is a big movie fan. You're especially fond of films that take place during the Roman Empire, correct? The gladiatorial sort?
I know what this is about. You want me to have an abortion.
In addition to being fluent in the language of cinema, Gary also speaks excellent jive. This will all come in handy, because on today's show, Gary is going to pitch the 1980 Zucker Abrams Zucker comedy classic, Airplane, for the FlixWise Favorites list. Okay, all our recent episodes have been pretty serious. We went into a dark stretch of the Sight and Sound list, so I thought we could use a good palate cleanser. So without further ado, Gary, take us off.
Negligent airport food inspectors ignoring the warnings of veteran pilots. An ill-equipped Department of Veterans Affairs unable to assist those needy war heroes doomed to forever suffer from drinking problems and Ethel Merman shock syndrome in the aftermath of the war. A corrupt airline company unwilling to undertake the most obvious background checks of its pilots, like whether they are child predators or struggling NBA stars destined to crack under pressure. All three pathologies of the modern USA come to a head in the 1980 classic, Airplane. Like all triumphs of human expression, it illuminates our flaws and shows the worst of our humanity. The story begins with Ted Stryker, undergoing a stilted recovery from his experience in the war, launching one last desperate effort to salvage his romance with his beloved Elaine Dickinson, an airplane stewardess in the process of leaving him for good with this next flight. He tries to reason with her in the airport, but she is committed. The fracturing relationship is only echoed by the vicious and personal arguments between the two public address announcers over airport parking and loading restrictions. When Stryker, played masterfully by Robert Hayes in a performance that would foreshadow his future great work as the dad in Homeward Bound, is unable to make her give him a second chance, he buys one smoking ticket on her flight. So begins the emotional and intellectual journey on which the passengers and viewers would soon embark. For on this fateful flight, food poisoning of the fish served on the flight incapacitates both pilot Clarence Ofer, played by Peter Graves, and the co-pilot, looking suspiciously like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Roger Murdoch, played by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. With no one left to fly the plane, the flight resembles the relationship between Ted and Elaine, destined for a crash after an aborted ascent. The worst of our humanity? Yes. But still, too, does this masterpiece display man at its best. The lone doctor on board, Dr. Rumack, played by Leslie Nielsen, when confronted with dining options of steak or fish, breaks the lockstep conformity of catered dinners and has lasagna. He treats sick passengers and relays the desperation and urgency of the situation to stewardesses and pilots. A stewardess lifts the spirits of a young dying girl by singing her an inspirational song, and the whole cabin joins in. Mrs. Cleaver unites the races by serving as a translator for a jive-speaking black man in desperate pain. Still, despite all this, the fate of the passengers hinge on Stryker, a pilot during the war, who must overcome his own personal anguish from his perceived mistakes during the war and successfully land the plane. Like a family lifting its fallen member to its feet, can Elaine, Dr. Rumack, and an inflatable automatic pilot provide the help he needs to begin his life anew and win just one for the zipper? The film needs no defense and speaks for itself on artistic grounds. That the film is not already on the Sight and Sound list of the 250 greatest movies of all time is a testament only to the corruption, perhaps they are financed by the FAA, and rigidity of the little minds that compose the rabble of voters.
Well said, Gary. Well, That was pretty amazing. Martin, do you have anything you'd like to add to that summary?
I think that's perfect.
That pretty much sums it up, yeah. So, do you agree that the fact that Airplane is not already on the sight and sound list is evidence of, if not some sort of, perhaps some sort of blackmail, perhaps some sort of elaborate conspiracy, really?
I mean, if we're being charitable, there some people cannot quite pick up on the sophistication.
True. No, it's only for the greatest of minds. Yeah, no, I think you really do need to have some kind of background in, if not quantum physics, then at least some kind of science background in addition to a philosophy background. So, I mean, not only is it a technical film, but it's also a deeply spiritual film as well, which I don't think you mentioned in your
It is a triumph of the human spirit.
Absolutely.
There's no question. Highbrow stuff, yeah.
Yeah. on a more serious note, a very, very serious note.
I am serious,
yes,
Pauline.
Oh, I believe you. But, Martin, do you like Airplane?
Yeah, I think it's hysterical. It made me laugh.
Okay. Do you have an explanation for why it's not on the sight and sound list?
Well, I think it's really tough with comedy because it can be really subjective and it's really hard to rationalize why you like a comedy. I think there's a lot of critical attention paid to films that are serious, but it's really hard to use the tools of film criticism to understand what makes a comedy effective or ineffective. So I think there is kind of a tendency to just stay away from a lot of comedies, even ones that are very widely liked.
Right, right. So, but how can we gauge whether a comedy is great? What is the best way to tell?
Well, I think if they make us laugh, that's really the only gauge of quality that I apply to it. I mean, sometimes I think we do reward comedies that maybe have some social point that they're trying to make or satirize something that makes them quote-unquote important. But I think really the only marker of a good comedy is that it makes people laugh. And I think Airplane definitely does that. I'm not sure I know anyone who would watch this and not find it funny, because I think it's funny in many different ways. I think there's a little bit of something for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe if you don't find the big gags hysterical, you'll find the deadpan deliveries funny or the... you know,
right, yeah. Right, yeah. It's one of those movies where there's jokes piled on top of jokes. It's this like joke saturation comedy where, you know, like even if not all the jokes are going to land the first time, you're going to miss a lot of the jokes the first time you watch it. But I think the broadest, the biggest jokes, the more outlandish jokes are what makes us laugh the first or second time, but then on subsequent viewings, there are just always more and more jokes to discover, which, I mean, it's truly remarkable because I've probably seen this movie at least, 30 times? Gary and I watched this movie all the time when we were kids, and we're still finding jokes. Most of them are the dirty ones because we didn't really pick up on them when we were kids.
Well, I think there is something to be said about that attention to detail, which I think is really incredible. Like, I think you hear filmmakers admiring Airplane. I think just recently Paul Thomas Anderson was talking about being a little bit inspired by Airplane when he was making Inherent Vice. And I'm sure, like, probably...
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know how much of that you can see in the film, but there's a few gags or deliveries where you can kind of tell that maybe he had Airplane on the brain when he was making it.
I love that. That makes me really happy. Because there is stuff about the movie that feels a little bit dated. There's a lot of stuff you probably couldn't get away with today. But actually, the thing that it really brought to mind for me was 30 Rock, where the jokes are just flying at you at a mile a minute, and there's that slapdash quality where we're going to throw everything on the wall and some things will stick, some things won't. But more often than not, it's going to land. And also, 30 Rock also does that thing with racial stereotypes where you have to depict them in order to rip them apart. And the whole, excuse me, stewardess, I speak jive. That is such, like, that totally sounds like a joke that Tina Fey would make, don't you think?
Yes. Yeah, I don't watch much 30 Rock, but
yeah.
I mean, that's one of the more passable jokes in it. And it's the whole scene when they're in the Peace Corps.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's just kind of painful. But that some things do seem dated that you really couldn't get away with now. I think
people still laugh at it.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny when you listen to the audio commentary, the directors, Abrams, Zucker, and Zucker, actually point out a lot of these things. They're saying, oh, there's early homophobia, and they seem to be very aware of what those jokes are.
Yeah, but they don't apologize for it, I imagine.
No.
It's kind of normal at the time. Like, if you watch 70s sitcoms,
right,
you'll hear things from time to time. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
What did they just say?
But does that diminish the film?
No, because it's still funny. I mean,
is it?
I laugh at the scene in the Peace Corps. I mean, it's kind of outrageous. But
yeah, I think that was okay. So I was surprised by actually the autopilot stuff. I didn't think was that funny. It was just kind of awkward.
I find it funny.
Really?
I mean, it's just kind of absurd situation. It's just an absurd situation.
It is. Everything about the movie is absurd. That didn't land especially well for me.
It could be because you've seen it many, many times.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny what, in like the post 9/11 world, where like future generations are just not going to get the jokes.
Right.
The Hare Krishna stuff not going to be funny in 5 years because no one's going to know what that is.
Well, I mean, people, you will explain to your children on that day when you watch Airplane, what airplanes and airports used to be like.
Right, yeah.
Like how I know that they're making a coffee commercial joke when she says, Jim never has a second cup at home.
Right, but even that, it's not as funny because I just don't. I mean, I guess maybe it's funnier because it's more absurd. What are they talking about?
Well, like, there are a lot of pop culture references in it that I think should be dated, but instead the fact that we might not get them right away, they sort of add to the B-movie-isms that we might recognize from films of the 70s or older. Like, you know, I don't think anyone would have seen the film that it's mostly based on, Zero Hour, but I think we all kind of recognize the makeup of that film just in...
Right, exactly. Yeah. I think the most successful jokes in the film are the ones that are... They're parodies. Mm-hmm. The broader the parody... Like, the more non-specific the parody, the funnier the joke. And, I mean, obviously there are exceptions, but, like, the From Here to Eternity and the Saturday Night Fever, everybody's seen those scenes. Everybody still watches those movies.
I think probably more people have seen that than the actual films that they're making fun of. And
probably.
I think, like, it's sort of strange when you see in pop culture, like, even something like the movie Ted, the Seth MacFarlane movie, it's funny that it's not referencing Saturday Night Fever in that movie. It's referencing Airplane, referencing Saturday Night Fever. It's
yeah. So I don't know, but all that being said, like, this is despite Gary's claims otherwise, this isn't necessarily an important movie. Or I don't know if maybe you disagree. It doesn't feel like it's canon worthy necessarily. It is, at least it's not something you immediately think of when you think of the movie canon, the great movie canon. Would you disagree?
Well, I mean, it's easy to write off the movie as frivolous because it doesn't seem to have a point unless you read into it more like I did.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think the Sight and Sound list or any list should be rewarding or noting great achievements. And this movie is an achievement. And so there's... H.L. Mencken had the famous definition of puritanism. It's the haunting feeling that someone somewhere is enjoying themselves.
Right.
I feel like the Sight and Sound people probably...
They're Puritans.
They're movie Puritans.
You hear that?
Well, I think, like, any film that anybody has watched 30 times, like, who am I to say that's not important? Because it's clearly important to the people who watched it that much and all the people who have seen it and love it.
Right. You know,
so it's hard to diminish that. And I think, like, as frivolous as it might seem, it does kind of make me think that there is something absurd about movies and the way we construct movies. And it kind of reminds me that maybe I shouldn't take this all so seriously all the time.
Right. That is true. That's a really good point. It's a good lesson for movie critics and just general movie fans. And we just got done talking about Tarkovsky, or we did a few weeks ago, and it's such an interesting contrast. But how does Airplane stack up against Andrei Rublev? And how do we even make the comparison?
Well, you can't make the comparison. I mean, their achievements are in completely different dimensions.
Okay.
But I mean, so what Airplane achieves is important to me. So when I think of what I enjoy about movies, it's sort of when I'm with my friends and we, you know, think of all the absurd ideas. And I imagine the Zucker brothers and Abrams, they're kind of like acting how I would with my friends if we were actually good filmmakers. And just thought of every stupid idea we had and just threw it all in there.
Right, right. And they're clearly film buffs. They are so fully aware of every single movie cliche. And they're so smart about lampooning not just disaster movie flicks, but romance, war. I mean, there's really not a genre they don't touch.
Right. And I feel the movies helped in reading about it. The Zucker brothers and Abrams, they feel this way too. A lot of the actors in the movie are kind of big leads from a previous generation. So it's kind of got this older style that's dying off, and it's like their one last gasp where they just lampoon themselves.
Yeah. They play it so straight, though, which is what really sells the movie. Lloyd Bridges is fantastic.
Yes.
the hard drinking, hard smoking, hard glue sniffing, what is his title? Flight controller man.
Well, it's funny too. Like even Leslie Nielsen, who I think most people probably know from Naked Gun and things like that. He used to be a serious actor.
Right. Hard to believe. But I mean, his other most famous role that I think of is Forbidden Planet. Yeah,
for sure. And I think when you look at these 50s, 60s sort of B movies that Airplane is calling back to, those movies border on self-parody already, because I think they're so antiquated in the way the performances are, and I think just our tastes have changed so much that it becomes difficult to take films like that seriously.
Yeah, but I think I appreciate that in order to be a good parody, you kind of do have to take the film seriously. Like, it's a very loving homage to these films. but as you guys have talked about, like, the Abram Zucker machine keeps rolling, and what makes Airplane the standout of their filmography?
They haven't made a movie recently as part of their combination, I don't think.
I think that they've since gone off individually and made things. Like, I do believe they are part of the whole epic movie, teen movie.
Are they?
I think so.
Oh.
I know one of the Zucker brothers went on to make serious movies. I think he made Ghost.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Right. I like the Naked Gun movies also. I've never seen Top Secret, though the clips I've seen are fantastic.
Okay.
But it's just funnier. I feel like the Naked Gun movies are, they're funny, but they're a little more goofy. They don't have this sort of all these different people with leading men with their gravelly voices playing it perfectly straight.
Yeah.
So they got George Kennedy, I think, in the Naked Gun movies. But even he's kind of got a grin on his face and everything.
Leslie Nielsen, I think, plays it perfectly. He's so great. He's what's his face? Dr. Strangelove. What's his name?
Oh, George C. Scott?
No.
Peter Sellers?
Yeah, Peter Sellers. He's kind of got this, like, Peter Sellers charm, like, in Pink Panther charm to him. I think he's so great.
In the Naked Gun movies especially, he's kind of got this goofy style to him, but he's kind of good-natured and sweet. This one, he's super serious.
Yes, he plays it completely straight here.
Like, I was thinking, if they ever remade Airplane, who could replace Leslie Nielsen? And I was thinking that Liam Neeson would be really, really funny film like this, because he's so serious and deadpan and associated with all these serious movies that when he says something ridiculous or funny, it makes it that much more funny. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen him on Life's Too Short.
No.
Not.
Oh, he's talking to Ricky Gervais and Warwick Davis and Stephen Merchant, and he's saying how he wants to get into comedy, and it's very Leslie Nielsen-esque.
I could see that. Someone needs to put Liam Neeson in a comedy, not just because I often confuse Leslie Nielsen and Liam Neeson.
I was
going to
say, the names are very
similar. Their names are extremely similar. I think it was meant to be. Because I conflate the two actors in my mind all the time.
So yeah, Naked Gun reboot, people, get on that.
Let's do it. Well, I think it's Lampert, Kessler, Lampert time. Yeah. We got to get on that.
But back to these modern day, spoofs.
Yeah.
I haven't seen all that many of them. Some are considered better than others. Generally, they're considered pretty bad. They won't make you laugh.
Right.
One is probably just lacking originality, but I just think, so this combination, it worked here. Yeah. And I think they're probably smarter than a lot of these modern writers.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, not so much of comedy is this just alchemy, and it's kind of inexplicable what makes something work so much of the time. And maybe that is why it's so underrated.
And it's really, like, I never feel more embarrassed than when I'm trying to explain why I find something funny and nobody else does. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm sure that those modern movie parodies have their defenders.
I'm sure. I mean, they keep making them, so somebody must be watching them.
Right, exactly. I mean, and they're just now, like, there was that movie last year, They Came Together, with Amy Poehler and Paul Rudd, which is lampooning romantic comedies, which I don't think was all that successful, just because, way to kick a genre while it's down, you know? there has to be the sense that, like, you're going after the right target. And I absolutely think that Saturday Night Fever is the correct target, because that movie could be taken down a couple notches. And just disaster flicks, they are kind of a parody unto themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's an art to take it up even further. Like, that, the comedy is just ratcheted up so high in this movie. The absurdity is, like, just really up to 11. which, speaking of, is Spinal Tap on the list?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. If not...
That seems like that one should be.
Yeah, because someone
the
may...
The mockumentary representative?
Precisely, yes. I think someone might need to pitch that. Just putting out that call. But there are, we've had a couple of submissions for comedy films, or at least lighthearted films. So I pitched Zoolander, and that made the cut. And Swing Time was pitched, did not make the cut, which I objected to personally. I thought it should have. But I'm hesitant to just... I guess this is the problem. It's like, it doesn't feel like a movie that should be on the list, but I don't really know why.
Well, because they made a mistake.
Right, okay. is there room for Airplane and Spinal Tap? Do they both belong on the greatest of all time list?
Only if you let in Wayne's World 2. Not to be confused with Wayne's World number 2.
Okay, well, yeah, some that has its defenders, believe me.
I mean, we can't add these movies haphazardly. You need a whole episode devoted to each potential alternative submission.
Right, right. But I feel like the argument for all of these movies, someone could pitch Wayne's World 2 and say, I think this movie is really, really funny. And then I would say, you might have a case for Wayne's World, but Wayne's World 2, you're crazy. But I'm not sure...
Right.
What? How to defend either?
Right. So my understanding of the purpose of this list is we're creating a pantheon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
These are movies you should see.
Yes.
And Airplane is critically acclaimed. I think it's 98% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
This is a movie a lot of people agree is really funny.
Yeah.
It's probably true of Wayne's World, too. Wayne's World also.
As well.
But, so, I don't know. And as I argued when I submitted Die Hard, the Pantheon, or just this ultimate list, should have some movies that you enjoy seeing. And that would probably include variety. Imagine you were, you know, put away on an island and had to watch movies for the rest of your life. Which movies would you want on there? As of right now, the Sight and Sound list is a depressing list. You would not enjoy your time on that island.
Yeah, there is just a real dearth of movie comedies. Although, if you think, some people think The Rules of the Game is hilarious.
Oh.
I can't say I'm among those people.
Well, like, it becomes tricky because I think comedy, what often speaks most strongly to us on a comedic level, it's not what speaks most widely to a group of people. I think if you try to come to some kind of consensus on what are the great comedies, you often kind of come up with a very broad collection of comedies, and that's not what really makes us laugh the most. I think like maybe comedy, it's almost too personal to have our favorite comedies be completely canonized. I think, you know, after a long day of work, and I'm not going to watch Persona, I'm going to watch Hot Rod, but I can't explain why that's you know, a good movie, because it's maybe just a good movie to me and not necessarily to other people.
It's
a personal process, kind of engaging with a comedy, and I know people who really don't like a lot of the comedies that I like, so it's tough.
But I mean, all movies are subjective. Now, some of these other supposedly higher brow movies may be more stimulative as far as discussions. There's not a whole lot to discuss as far as Airplane, but we're giving it a go.
But
I mean, so it's, when you're ranking comedies, and if we feel like it's a worthwhile effort to include some comedies on this list, and not just movies that are comedies, but we include it for other reasons, like The Rules of the Game, if we're going to do that, we should include comedies that have a broad consensus of being very funny. Or we should just include what I like. Since I am the submitter.
Right. And the arbiter of all things. The world didn't know it appointed Gary judge and jury of all things, but that's the way it is. Hate to break it to everybody. But it does have broad appeal. I don't know anyone who does not like Airplane, who does not think it's funny.
On the inaugural episode, Gabe expressed some hesitancy.
Right.
Or I don't know if he said he didn't like it, but
he said he didn't think of it as a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listeners, on our very first episode, our guest Gabe Haggard, when Gary said that our Airplane was his favorite movie of all time, Gabe expressed some reservations, saying that he didn't think Airplane was a movie. That could be true, or maybe Airplane is the only movie.
Yeah.
I prefer to think of it that way.
Well, I'm wondering, too, if especially people who are of a younger generation might not find this as funny, because so many things are maybe specific to that time period, and part of me sort of doubts that it would be as funny to somebody who isn't as familiar with, for instance, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Right. There's definitely some stuff that feels dated.
I don't know. Some's dated, but so 1980, is when it came out. I don't know when I first saw it. It's probably the late 90s. That's, you know, it's getting close to 20 years after the fact.
Yeah.
A lot of it was probably dated for me. I didn't know what Saturday Night Fever was.
Okay.
But the scene's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've heard this complaint about the modern spoof movies. They just kind of show what happens in modern movies. There's nothing intrinsically funny about this. Whereas with Airplane, we have, like, they're in a rough bar and Girl Scouts start attacking each other.
Right. I mean, the absurdity in this is so heightened. I mean, just Monty Python levels of just out righteousness. And speaking of Monty Python, I would say Life of Brian is one that we should consider for the FlixWise favorites list as well.
Absolutely.
But that movie, both Life of Brian and Holy Grail and Meaning of Life, I think those, the absurdity, there's a point to the absurdity, whereas Airplane is just totally nonsensical. It is out to lampoon movies. That is its sole purpose. And while the Sight and Sound people enjoy navel gazing and movies about movies, so that's not necessarily a mark against it. But as we were saying, like, there's nothing, this movie has no aspirations beyond what making us laugh and making fun of other movies. And is that okay? Is that enough to let for, is it, I guess that's my question. Is it enough? What do we think?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Martin, what do you think?
I'm actually having like a little internal struggle right now.
Yeah.
I do find it fascinating that Stalker and Airplane are the same medium, that it does sort of broaden my understanding of what a film can be, seeing this thing that's an amalgamation of jokes.
Yeah.
It's almost experimental, trying to cram as many jokes
into
a film as possible. I don't know if there's like a single scene that isn't funny in some way to me. So I think in that way, I think it's very fascinating. And I would say, yeah, it's worth people taking a look at and worth maybe canonizing in some way.
Okay. I'm still sensing a lot of hesitation. Maybe canonizing. Do we maybe canonize Joan of Arc? No, we canonize Joan of Arc. but what about other... I know we've sort of touched on this. Other spoofs. Kentucky Fried Movie was their first film. Abrams, Zucker collaboration. They wrote that film together.
Right.
What elevates Airplane above that film? Above Kentucky Fried Movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think like Kentucky Fried Movie, it's more like a series of skits, right? It's like the experience of flicking through channels on television or that kind of a feeling. And I think Airplane, there is sort of this narrative that holds it together, weirdly enough. Like, I heard a story, I should have looked this up beforehand because I am not totally positive how credible the source was, but I've heard that during one of the first test screenings of Airplane, the directors were sort of amazed that despite doing everything to remind people that they are in fact watching a movie, that this is not something to take seriously, people sighed when the plane landed on the ground.
It sort of reminds me of Starship Troopers, where it's the romance is intentionally ridiculous and very soapy teenage 90210-y.
Yes.
But I still get a little sad when what's-her-name dies.
Dizzy. Oh my god, I get so sad. Yes.
Right?
Like, I think in movies, we want to be told stories, and I think it's almost hard to mess that up, and it makes me sort of a little bit disillusioned when I go and see a film, and I feel like it's not that hard to get me engaged in a story, and a film fails to do that. And I think, weirdly enough, Airplane does tell a story.
It does. It tells a story that we've seen a million times before, and yet somehow we do care. I think that is the key. Do we care whether or not Stryker lands that plane and he and Elaine get back together?
I kind of do, yeah.
Yeah. Is that, so can we agree that is central to our enjoyment of the film? Or does it not really matter? Is that an afterthought?
Yeah, I kind of like that it has this coherent story, however cliched, kind of holding all these jokes together.
Yeah.
And it's everyone's playing it straight, and it's just this world is chaos all around them.
Like, earlier you mentioned the Monty Python films, and I sort of feel like Meaning of Life might have more jokes than Life of Brian, but I feel like Life of Brian is somehow the better movie by falling into this narrative structure. Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, that I like that the Meaning of Life has much funnier segments or vignettes, but the Life of Brian is the most cohesive of the three, and therefore I think the most successful.
Right.
So I think that same could probably be said of Airplane, where Naked Gun, I don't know, it's also kind of the funniest.
Yes.
I'd also say, so these movies are, what differentiates it and kind of what we reward movies for in general when they're put up there on a pedestal, is that it has some sort of cultural penetration. Right. I don't really know anything from Kentucky Fried Movie. I can't count how many people, it's like, I just randomly find they love Airplane, and we start exchanging Airplane jokes.
Absolutely. No, this happens on a weekly basis, where I'll just have a quote from Airplane, and someone in the office will start laughing. There's always an occasion to reference an Airplane joke. It's just... I guess my question is, if we let Airplane through, are we opening up the floodgates? Did we then have to make room for Monty Python, for Wayne's World, take your pick?
I mean, this could be troublesome, but I feel like those floodgates were opened when Zoolander was included.
But Zoolander has an important social message. Let it be
As
said.
Does Airplane.
It could be so. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to have the attitude that there can only be one. We're only allowed one absurd comedy on this list, and if that's the case, let it be Airplane. I think there's room for more, and if there may not be an important social message to this film. There may or may not be. I don't want to say there isn't, because it does satirize, all of the depictions of war. I mean, that's kind of a bold stance. It's interesting. It came out in 1980, which is the beginning of the Reagan era, right? So
he hadn't been elected yet.
But okay. It's a beginning of the turn towards social conservatism, right? And economic conservatism, right?
Sure.
I'm gonna make this claim. Here okay. we go. Sure. But we are now ready to laugh at depictions of the Vietnam era. Like, we're now removed from the images of horror and can therefore turn around and we're ready to make fun of
That's true. The war is clearly more in the style of World War II
I
than Vietnam.
So, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Maybe that doesn't work. I was just riffing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've probably in serious times people like a good comedy. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Let that be the lesson.
It should be noted, Carter deregulated the airline industry a few years before this, so maybe there was some social commentary on that.
Could be.
This is the mayhem we have brought ourselves.
All right, well, that dismantles the theory that there is no social relevancy, because clearly, like, this is deep cultural analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'll take a vote. We'll go around. Gary, I know you submitted this, but do you feel that it is worthy of inclusion on the FlixWise favorites list?
I do.
Okay, Martin, I don't want any wavering. Yes, yay or nay?
Yes, yes, I do.
Okay, good.
I do think so.
All right, I think so too. And that's the way we frame it, FlixWise, that is. If you think Top Secret is the superior ZAZ film, you can come tell us about it on our website, FlixWise.com. Or you can find us on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/FlixWise. You can come find me on Twitter, the handle is @FlixWise. I know you guys have already set it to autopilot at this point, but let me implore you to please, please, please rate us and leave us a good review on iTunes. On our next show, we're back to the darkness, albeit the kind that most red-blooded Americans seem to enjoy. It's the 31st movie on the Sight and Sound list, The Godfather Part 2. Until then, Martin, thank you so much for coming on again.
Thank you for having me back.
All right. Gary, pleasure as always.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Time to go out there and win just one for the zipper. Good luck, Striker. Roll countdown.
It's an entirely different kind of podcast.
Oh, yeah.